Welcome to the Michael Yu Podcast. We have two very, 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 very important and special guests today. We have Bridget Wong and Jill Van Damme, who are part of the Michael Yu resale team here at Oakland Realty. So Bridget Wong is my buyer's agent, and Jill is our executive administrator here at our team. So we thought we would give a really cool insight of what a real estate team looks like and talk a little bit more about the life of a real estate team in Vancouver. So Bridget, Jill, how you doing?
Great. Thank you for having us.
Hi, everyone.
Are you volunteering or voluntold to do this?
Voluntold, definitely voluntold.
Awesome. Okay, so guys, why don't you just introduce yourselves a little bit? So Jill, why don't you start, and then Bridge afterwards.
Where do I even begin? I guess just a quick recap of myself. I started working with Michael in 2016. I basically do all of the behind the scenes stuff for the team. So I do all the social media for the team. I post the listings, all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's kind of, I guess, a little quick recap of what I do at the team. Outside of work, I hang out with my dog.
Compelling. This is good pod. Good pod.
Bridget. I'm Bridget. So I've been working with Mike for about, I think, four to five years. I started off as an assistant role, so it's sort of what Jill is doing right now, and then got my realtor's license and just been with him ever since. And I work with a lot of his buyers. I take care of listings, so doing showings and open houses and things like that. So it's been a good long 4 years.
You know, it feels like forever.
It definitely does. Yeah,
so Bridget, Jill, and I have are what we call a resale team. So basically how that operates is, so I would be what we call the listing agent. So I would be the one responsible for going after listings. When you're a residential realtor, there are two kind of clients you work with. So you work with sellers or you work with buyers. And I essentially work on the seller side of the equation. Bridget would work on the buyer side of the equation, so helping people to purchase homes. And then Jill helps with administrative and marketing support for both sides, so for the listing side and for the buying side. So like, it's we're a well-tuned and oiled machine here at our company. We've been working together for a long, long time. I've been working on teams in my real estate career since 2008. I started in 2006, so I was on my own. So I was fulfilling all three roles, essentially, for the first year and a half or 2 years of my business. And then we got our first assistant, and then Bridget was been our buyer's agent for the last 4.5 years now. Mm-hmm. So that's pretty cool. So guys, what is it like to be working? So Jill formerly worked at a lawyer's office. And what was it like working there, and how does it differ from what you do now?
So I worked in the legal industry for 6 years. When I started there, I had no experience in an office at all. Previous to that, I served in restaurants and bars. So when I began working at the law firm, I started out at reception just because of my lack of experience, even though I had a legal assistant diploma that I had gotten. I started at reception. I just learned a lot about being a professional, working in an office. From there, I moved on to be a legal assistant for two lawyers. And then at the end of my time there, I was the executive assistant to the senior partner of the firm. And I got to be a part of a lot of really cool cases. Lots of the stuff that we worked on was in the Supreme Court of British Columbia, the Supreme Court of Canada, lots of landmark cases, lots of victories. And so it was really great to be a part of that. But I guess my job there was pretty different. I was kind of tied to the desk from 9 to 5. Lots of my job included looking through legal documents, booking a lot of travel. And so with that, lots of the lawyers traveled often. So lots of the time it was just me in the office being the only administrative staff. Also, everyone else in the office was significantly older than me. I worked with a lot of lawyers who had been in the industry for quite some time. And I guess the oldest person in the office, he was like 70. So I don't want to say I got bored because I really loved that job for the time that I was there. And I learned so, so much. But I guess I just wasn't learning anymore. I felt like I had gotten to the end of my growth in that job, in that office, and in the position, and even in the legal field. So that's why I decided to make a change. I guess I took a little bit of time to figure out what I wanted to do, but I knew I was interested in real estate, and so I figured I would do something that I knew I was good at in that field to see if I liked it as much as I thought I would. And that sort of brought me to Oakwin and to Michael's team, thankfully. So yeah, here, I mean, the office atmosphere is completely different. Number one, most people here are around my age. I guess number two, you know, it's more of a fun, upbeat atmosphere. And then also, you know, I love the fact that I'm not chained to the desk. Lots of my days are spent out and about, meeting people, meeting new people all the time. And so that's, I guess, the main difference.
Great. How about you, Bridget? So Bridget started as a working at the bank, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, so just a little bit of background about me as well. So I studied sciences at UBC. I did a general science degree, which pretty much means nothing nowadays. So I couldn't find anything. I couldn't find anything related to my field when I graduated. So I did what every science grad did. I got into banking. I started as a teller at CIBC. It was okay. Like, I think it was okay. I didn't really love it. I think because there's a lot of competition, I think, between tellers, and not the healthy kind. It's sort of like, oh, how many credit cards did you sell? So I need to beat you, kind of thing. So I didn't really like that environment very much. And then so by chance, I met somebody who knew Michael, who was looking for an assistant role. So I figured I'd give it a shot. And so then I joined Oakwin and became on Michael's team. And I find that the environment here is very collaborative. Everyone is willing to help each other. Like, Michael is, you know, a great teacher and mentor, and he's more than happy to share his skills and his experiences with you, which is not something that you would experience at a bank, I find. I feel like a lot of people tend to, they want themselves to rise up and other people to, you know, to not do so well, which was tough for me. So I think in this environment, you really can thrive a lot more, and it's okay to make mistakes, and it's okay to, it's okay to make mistakes. It's great to try, and I think that's sort of the environment that I needed, and I think that's why I really like working here, and that was the major difference, I think, between my two workplaces.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I always, like, I don't like authority. I actually hate authority so much, and I never wanted to be boss. I don't think anyone should have a boss. So I really want to, you know, to create a environment where everyone's on the same, like, they're seeing things eye to eye, everyone's on the same level. And I think that that's a, you know, very healthy way to work, you know,
for sure,
because everyone's role is so important. And like, when I look at how much Bridget and Jill have to do every single day, I'm always like, oh man, like, oh shit, this is bad. It's like a lot of stuff, like, every day. And, you know, we've been so fortunate to be able to, you know, work with all of our clients and our buyers and sellers. So what were your impressions? So before you guys got into real estate, what were your kind of impressions of what it would be like to be working with a realtor, and what they actually are?
I think for me, and I think with a lot of people that don't know real estate, I thought that it was easy money. I thought you sell a house and you make X amount, and, you know, you're good for the rest of the year, kind of thing. And it wasn't until I got into the industry that I realized how much work there is to it. You only see the glamorous, like the top realtor, but then you don't realize how much years of hard work and, you know, door knocking and prospecting and cold calling that that person did to get to where he is. So I thought it was easy money, to be honest. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, I was definitely lured into it. Just kidding. No, I think it was eye-opening for me. And I think even, like, people around me, like, all my friends are shocked. Like, how much do you work? Like, how many days a week do you need to, you know? And I'm like, that's just the way it is. And, yeah, I think people don't realize the amount of hard work that goes into it.
Yeah, I think I pictured it pretty accurately. I have friends who are realtors. I've seen, you know, how they conduct their business. So I basically pictured it pretty much how it is. I remember when I was looking for a job, I pictured a lot of, like, interacting with people, right? Which is what I wanted. And yeah, so I think I was pretty accurate. I guess the one part of it that I wasn't, you know, expecting was the fact that it is like a 24/7 job. It's not like I work 24/7, but I'm available to work 24/7. And I see Michael, you know, working lots of nights until like 10 p.m. So that part of it, I didn't really realize. I think it's kind of, that's like the behind the scenes stuff, right? That you do not see unless you're in real estate, unless you're doing it. So that part of it, I obviously didn't know. But yeah, I mean, it's okay, right? Real estate is a lot of hard work. It's a lot of long hours. But for me, like, I've always been a hard worker and I love working. So yeah.
Before we started this podcast, as we were doing it, Jill kind of did this little pan for like an Insta story or for like something like that, where it has like a filter on it and it like, it has a filter of, like, I was, like, a little cat or something. And, you know, I kind of want, I don't know, it's weird. I think that the, you know, life, I don't want to live life with a filter. And I don't want to show people things with filters. So I actually want to edit this podcast less.
Yeah.
And just, like,
less work for
Jill, but also just, like, you know, just let's just be, like, totally real. Like, I actually have this new policy for all my social media stuff. For all my personal social media stuff, that I'm not going to filter anything. And I'm also, like, I'm writing this blog right now. I'm not going to edit it. I'm just going to, like, free flow my thoughts. It could have the worst grammar in the world, capital in the wrong place. I love using colons. Whenever I'm going to use a colon, I'm like, yeah, man. And so, so, like, I'm just going to edit things a lot less and just, like, keep it real. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, what do you guys think about that? Because you guys are in a younger generation than me. I'm about 10 years, more than, probably around 10 years older than both Jill and Bridget. Mm-hmm. So, like, what do you guys think about that in your generation?
I think that I think I'm way better looking than I actually am. And it's because I'm so obsessed with filters. So I don't relate, Mike. I'm like obsessed. So that's...
I kind of have to agree with Jill on this one. I love filters. I think it makes you look better than you really do.
Yeah,
so.
But then why? Like, why would you want to show like what you don't look like?
But it's, I like, do realtors... look like that, but just, like, you know, with the little dog ears.
Like it. So, like, it's like those realtors that have, like 80 years ago with their headshot, and then, they show up at the property, and, like, that's not you.
Yeah, that's actually really
lots of them. Yeah, so don't you think that, like, we should have it as close to, like, because if you really think of it, okay, so all this social media stuff is almost like, your memories, you know, like, because you'll get a look back on all these feeds that you had.
Right.
And, you know, like, when we're 80 years old, you'll be able to access your Facebook when you were, like, 20 years old. I just think it should, like, we should be, like, totally authentic. Like, completely authentic. Like, no, like, don't care. Like, I'm starting to care. It's weird. I started to care, like, less and less and less and less. As I get older, I care less and less and less what anyone else thinks. I could care less. And I don't want to, like, so there's something called curating. So, for example, let's say you take a video of something. Like, you curate that video to make sure it's the right one. Or you want to take a photo of, like, take five photos and then pick the best one and post that best one.
Right.
I feel like I'm doing that a lot less. Like, I took a little Insta story of my girlfriend yesterday making dinner, and she's like, she's very sensitive about being looking too dark. Because she's like, you know, and Jill's opposite is hilarious, because Jill always wants to be tan. Yeah. So if anyone wants to compliment Jill on being tan, she's like, oh, well, yeah.
I will take that as a, I won't take that as a compliment. You call me tan.
Yeah, it's the best compliment.
And so, but for, you know, for my girlfriend, if she looks too dark, she's like, oh my gosh, it's like, I look so dark. Like, the sun has burned me.
That's like Bridget, too.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, yeah, but I just took the video and, like, just put it up. Like, you know, no, don't really think about it too much. I think, I don't know, I like to kind of return to, I don't know, everyone has their own personal thing, but, like, less curation, like, less, you know, filtering, like, all just, like, real life.
I think I've realized definitely as I've aged that no one cares about what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like, not in that, but just I always think everyone is thinking about, or people are thinking, no one cares. Like, I don't care about what anyone looks like in a photo. Mm-hmm. And no one cares what I look like in a photo, you know, except for me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So let's say you were 70 years old. Would you want to look back at a filtered version of yourself or the real version of yourself? If you were to put yourself fast forward to 70, what would you prefer? If you were 70?
Real.
Yeah, I think real too. I don't want to see myself with a dog filter.
Yeah, it's like, exactly, yeah. Right? Because it's going to be like dumb. It's like when we look at our sticker pictures, like, yes, you're like, yes, oh, yeah. I'm an idiot.
Yeah.
Like, dude, who remembers sticker pictures?
Jill's like, what's a sticker picture?
Do you know what a sticker picture is?
No.
Okay, it's like totally Asian and you have to be from, so like, sticker picture, this thing, this phenomenon that happened in the 90s where like Asian kids would like take pictures and then they have like, take pictures in a photo booth, kind of like a photo booth you'd get at a mall, and then but it would have like a sticker back, so you can peel the sticker off and stick it to your like agenda that you got
and then
at
you
school.
Can decorate it, sparkles, yeah. And you can like, you know, put the date on it, yeah. And things like that. I was obsessed. You have no idea how much money I spent on sticker photos.
Yeah, I've never. I did a lot of photo booths, but I've never done a sticker photo.
Photo booths are, I think, what you like. You know, it's what you look at of like an ex-wife or something like that before, like while you're like before you commit suicide or something. Like that. Oh, that's whenever I see like a photo booth strip. Like I take photo booth strips with my ex-girlfriends and stuff like that, and they would all be like, there would be like a happy memory that you would like stare at before you put a gun in your mouth.
Oh my.
I feel like I watched this on TV. Yeah. Like, did you watch a show where that happened?
No, it's just like, so for example, you have a, like, let's say none of us are married. We're all desperate.
And sad.
Yeah, and sad. And just like, no one will have us. So basically, like, like wedding video, for example, like a wedding video, you will never watch a wedding video again if you're happily married. You only watch that wedding video when you're like, after you get divorced.
Like, yeah, and like cry.
Yeah, and
sad
cry,
on the couch.
And you're like, oh, she left me. And, and like, look at us. Like, look at us. Like, we look so good. Like, that's the only time you'd watch a wedding video. When else would you watch it?
True.
Like, would you, right?
Yeah, never.
You'd never watch it.
Yeah.
True.
I don't know how we got onto this topic.
Me either.
So let's reverse course to actually be helpful for people. Let's go back to normal life. So why don't you share some of the kind of, as a buyer's agent and also as a really strong administrator, what would be some of the top two tips you'd give to anyone that would be kind of doing those roles?
Number one tip is it's good to make mistakes. I think that's something that I learned while I worked with Mike, because I made so many mistakes when I started. I had no experience with real estate at all. I think I'm very good at my job, but at the same time, it was all so new. And I was, I guess, thrown into just this brand new role. And I made so many stupid mistakes. And every single time, Mike was just like, well, you know, learn from it and don't do it again, right? And I realized that through, I think, Mike's view on making mistakes, that it is a good thing. I think now, you know, mistakes are a good thing. They help you grow. It helps you become better. And, you know, as long as you don't repeat that mistake, then there's absolutely nothing wrong with making a mistake. Number two is, like, always take time that you need for yourself. It's easy to, like, for me personally, I'm a, like, very career-oriented person. I think my job's very important to me. And, or whatever it might be. It doesn't have to be your work. I always put things in front of myself, and I've learned that putting yourself first is the most important thing, because nothing else works if you're not good with yourself. So I think those are my top two tips.
I think for me, I think my first tip would be to really listen to what your clients' needs are. Sometimes they don't explicitly tell you what their needs are, and you need to kind of pick it up from like their body language, their tone of voice. And I think it's really important to have that skill to pick up, you know, to pick up what they're saying and what they're not saying. I think that to listen to what your clients' needs are is really important. And I think number two is to be patient, because a lot of times I work with first-time home buyers that don't really know what they are looking for, and it's your job to guide them through the process, and sometimes it takes, you know, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 tours to do it, but I think with each tour you need to really listen and be patient and just be willing to answer any questions that they may have.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think those are really great tips, and I think when you know you're fulfilling a like either an administrative role or a role that you have, like your to-do list is from floor to the ceiling like Jill's is every day, or mm-hmm. you're working with you know, people in making a huge decision in their life, mm-hmm. I think those are really, really great things to really listen. I think a lot of people that are entrepreneurs that get started in real estate or anything, they don't take that time to really listen to their clients very much. They kind of go over the top with all the things they can do and everything. And yeah, you should go and buy this property. I don't think, like, in your experience being a buyer's agent for three years now, like, people don't, like, you never make the decision for the client. They make the decision.
No, exactly. Yeah. Like, even if they really want to buy something and you're like, yeah, I don't think that's really great value, and at the end of the day, they want to buy it, they're going to buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For sure. And I think people think that they can be convinced or anything. No one can be convinced to buy a property.
No.
So, and especially, you know, by having a little bit of that fearlessness to, like Jill was saying, to be able to make mistakes. And I feel like what's really, really interesting, and I was talking to a young realtor about this yesterday, actually. Like in school, you get punished for making mistakes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And in life, you get rewarded for making mistakes. Mm-hmm. And it's so, like, there's such a weird dichotomy, because I've made so many horrible, humiliating mistakes, degrading, like, mistakes in my life. I've just made every error you could possibly make.
Yeah.
And, like, I feel like I've been rewarded for each of those, because it, like, it pushed me to, like, learn something and reflect on it and to gain, and to get better at something. And I think that's such a huge lesson. And I feel like a lot of young people have this fear of making errors.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. they always need to cross-reference, double-check. And I work with a lot of young people, and they're always scared of, like, fearful of making an error, making a mistake. Mm-hmm. What if I screw up? You're going to screw up. It's like life, you know? And as long as you, there's kind of, everyone has this golden rule. As long as you, treat others as you want to be treated yourself, and try and make sure that you're always being honest and being truthful, and you can put it out there to when you do make an error. That's the one thing that we have in our team that's really mm-hmm. important, is that we're like brutally, radically honest. Like, if someone looks like shit today, Bridge.
I had like 4 hours of sleep.
Yeah, I was going to tell you as soon as I walked in, but Vaughn told you to do a pod. I was like, you're looking rough today.
I'm
going to
go put on some more makeup now. Because I'm wearing this thick sweater, yeah. And it's really hot in here.
Why would you wear like that sweater is so thick.
Fall fashion.
It's really cold outside.
Yeah?
Yeah, there's a windstorm coming.
I hate itchy sweaters. And wool is like, wool was made to torture humans.
Yeah, this is quite itchy.
Yeah, like, why would you wear wool? Like, it doesn't, I don't get it.
It's cute.
It looks good.
Thank you.
Well, you're talking to the guy that wears orthopedic shoes.
Yeah.
So, what were we talking about?
Brutally honest.
Oh, yeah, brutally honest.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks, Mike.
Being brutally honest, I think, is you know, really important to be a part of a team, because I think there's a lot of trust that comes with that, because you know that the people around you aren't going to obviously lie, and mm-hmm. they're going to really, you know, be open about what's, what happened.
Mm-hmm.
And it happens all the time. And you know what? I think everyone's a leader, and something we never... Another thing that we never do is we never sell each other out. And I think that, mm-hmm. I think a lot of teams sell each, it's weird, a lot of teams, like, for example, I would never, like, blame Bridget or Jill if the client called me and said, oh, hey, like, this wasn't done. I always take full responsibility for it. And when I, for example, when I forget to call the client back or something like that, and they call Jill, like, I can't get a hold of Michael. They're like, oh, like, that's my fault. I forgot to, remind him, and he will call you right away. And, like, I take full responsibility. I should have reminded. There's something along those lines. We always, mm-hmm. like, we have each other's back, mm-hmm. which is hugely important. When it comes to doing the practice that we do, so I think it's really key. So in working in a team, like, we have a few core values here at our with our resale team. So do you guys want to talk about what core values are and why they're important? No, like, what just what core values are, not our core values.
Oh, I think the core values are what guides us to do our day-to-day. Anytime we make a decision, whether it be for our clients or for each other, I think it's important to listen to these core values, and they'll tell you what to do, essentially. So I think that's what core values are to me.
I remember when I first started on the team and core values were sort of introduced to me. Essentially, basically what Bridget just said, but it's 5 or 6 points that we all agree on, that we all value. And when you're in a situation, any situation in a day, it's just something to look at to guide your decision. And as a team, we all follow the same core values so that we all respond the exact same way to a situation.
Absolutely. So there's a fear for realtors or people in business. Let's say I owned a little corner store and I was at the register every day. There's this fear for a lot of entrepreneurs, business owners, that when I start hiring people, they always want me. Like, they want me to do every showing, they want me to do everything. And, like, if it doesn't come from me, then, like, the client's not going to be happy. And a lot of that is ego, because, you know, to start a business and to be a real estate agent, a lot of us tend to have big egos. Mm-hmm. But actually, what I found is that the real crux of it, the real important thing, is that everyone on the team should have the same pulse, the same heartbeat, the same way in which to see certain situations, because it's less onerous on a manager or someone else when there's predictability. So you know how people are going to behave in certain situations. So that's a huge part of being having core values when you first get started in a business. So so essentially, whenever you start a business, you spend some time in what we call discovery. So you try to research the business, understand the business really well. Okay. So you spend that time and energy to do that. And then the second thing you do is you do goal setting. Like, what do you want out of this? After you do the research and you think, this is a good endeavor. You have goal setting where you understand the goals that you want to make for your business. And then you build a plan. And building a plan to get towards the goal that you set based on the discovery or the research that you've done, mm-hmm. and the goal that you set out, you then build a plan. And once you build a plan, it should have a level of a component of building a core value system that you're going to follow within your practice and within your business. So in our resale team, we have core values that are different from our Oakwin Realty team. Okay. So do you guys want to share what those ones are and kind of talk about each one? Jill goes first.
Our core values are up on the wall behind me. We have a wall that's like all, we take selfies with our clients when we do possessions with them. So we have a wall that's like full of selfies, and in the middle is a framed picture of our core values. So it says we make people happy at the top. And number one is keep it simple and fun. I always say this one's like super self-explanatory. I don't think I have to elaborate on it. So
yeah, the simple and fun is really important, because I think a lot of people think real estate is very, very complicated, mm-hmm. and very, very difficult to navigate through. But it's actually pretty simple. It can be broken down really simply. I think a lot of the clients use this because we use really simple terms. We make it really easy for them to understand. And the second part of it, which is, you know, as important as the first, is to make it fun. So, like, mm-hmm. I really believe in having like a good time while you're working, because you're spending all this, we're spending all this time together. So even when I'm, you know, either in the hiring process or something like that, I'm like, can I get along with this person? Would I not only trust them to execute the things that they're supposed to, but also like be able to have fun with them and joke around and you know, be able to have a coffee or like an adult beverage with that person and have a good time. And I think like our clients really can see that fun in us too, because whenever we hang out with the clients, like we do these client appreciation parties and we just like have fun, and I think it's a really big part of our business. Bridge, what's the second one?
Our second one is, it gives us joy to serve our clients and each other by going the extra mile. I think this one is important because obviously we are in a customer service industry, so going above and beyond what is expected really does set you apart from the rest of the industry. But I think what's more interesting about this core value is not only do we serve our clients by going the extra mile, but we also serve each other by going the extra mile. And I think that's really important in working with a team, because you can't do anything. You can't do anything well alone, I think. And I think that in this team especially, we're very willing to step in for one another and do things for each other. If I have something to do that night, Jill or Mike or Angus or Kelsey would jump in and be like, oh, I can do it. Don't worry about it. And I think that's really important. And I think we really live up to this core value. Mm-hmm.
For sure. Jill, what's the next one?
Number three is, our goals are achieved through constant communication. There's two parts to this really for me. Is number one, goals. We'll just touch on that quickly, I guess, first. Like every single month, we communicate our goals to each other, and it helps us stay accountable to them. So there are professional goals, there are personal goals, and we each do them every single month. And I think the goals are achieved through constant communication also means like we communicate with each other about everything. Like I talk to my team more than I talk to like, you know, partner, family, like anyone. We have a WhatsApp chat. It's always active. We all know what each other is doing at any given time. And that's how we achieve like our professional goals, so that we're all always on the same page. We all know where each other is at, and we don't really leave anything off the table. Like we know everything about each other personally and professionally. And I think that's how we serve our clients so well.
Yeah, so as an employee, as an employer, you should get full medical records for your staff. Like, you need to know all their diseases and all their, like, you know, everything that happens psychologically as well. And no, I think the constant communication is huge. And something that, you know, this is a huge tip for someone that actually has a team. And it's like a magical thing that we have, which might be it sounds really dumb, but we have a shared calendar that I think is the most powerful tool that we use. And everyone on the shared calendar that we have, we can see their entire schedule. So we can see their personal schedule and their professional schedule. So we know how to like book people in for certain appointments, because a lot of the times you can't make it to something, you can ask one of your teammates to be there instead, especially when you're doing things in our industry, a service industry, where you're doing a lot of appointment bookings for showings and a variety of other things. So when you can look in a calendar and you can see that on Saturday morning, Bridge is free, but I'm at my family breakfast, I will not be able to be booked on something, and Bridget would go instead, or Jill would go instead. And so, like, I think having that tool is huge, because there's a lot of, it created a lot of seamlessness in our team structure. Okay, what is number four?
Number four is, be Ned Flanders. So for those of you who, is this from The Simpsons, right?
Yeah. Okay.
He's a nerdy guy, I think, a nerdy guy from The Simpsons. So from him, we learned that we need to be honest, transparent, and have high integrity. I think that this is really important, especially because we are in an industry where we work with people's most valuable assets, that we need to be honest and transparent. And not only that, but, you know, when we do make mistakes, like Michael said before, we really own up to our mistakes, and we don't hide anything on the table, or we don't hide anything from each other.
Yeah. So when it's interesting. So this the fourth core value that we have, I forget which book I read, and it talked about personification. So it said, if you were character in media, or if your customer was a certain profile, like who would they be? And so I kind of have profiled our customers, the people that work with us to buy and sell properties, essentially being a very simple person that's kind of humble pie, that has saved up, that they don't have a huge addiction to spending or anything like that. They really are responsible people, family oriented, that type of person. I always tell them that if you see someone wearing white New Balance shoes, that's our client. So it was funny because there was a, I'm not obsessed with shoes or anything like that. I talked about my orthopedic shoes, but I remember I was with a realtor who was shadowing me on an open house, and there's two people that came into the open house at the same time. There's a family of three, looking pretty tired. They came to walk through the open house, and then there was this really high end lady that was wearing high heels, She's like, I'm buying investment houses. And then this family, this small family of three that kind of looked tired and was just walking around. And, I beelined into that family. And that realtor's like, oh, that other lady, she seems so rich. She has so many properties and stuff like that. But I was like, no, I know my clients. And, that's my client. Mm-hmm. And so I talked to them. I said, this is how we can help. We really simplify it. We're very conservative. We put people in good positions. We never put people in bad financial positions. Whenever we advise on someone buying or selling a property, we're really conservative. And yeah, I beelined to that person, but you'd think this high flying lady with Louis Vuitton whatever was our client, but it's not. So mm-hmm. So and to personify ourselves is I love The Simpsons growing up. I was thinking, who on The Simpsons? And I think you can look at The Simpsons, and it has every character of life. And who I wanted to be in business was Ned Flanders, who's the neighbor of Homer Simpson. And basically, he has a little shop. He's an entrepreneur that has his store is called the Left Handed Store, and he's in the mall, and he has a family that he cares about very deeply. He's super honest, would never tell a lie. He's very routine, and he's every time you see him, he says his whole his catchphrase is "Heidi ho, neighbor" or something like that. And so he's a very very happy guy. And so I was for our team, we're gonna be that guy. Mm-hmm. And he doesn't care about fashion. He has a big old mustache, and he wears a green sweater, and yep. So he's just and that's who I wanted us to be. In business, not in our life. Jill's a wild party animal, and Bridget is a horrible addict, and she's selfish too.
The worst.
Yeah, very unlovable. But in profession, they are we all the same kind of person. And that's Ned Flanders. What's the last one?
Number five is we are determined to challenge ourselves to grow and improve. So, yeah, I think all of us are focused on, we have an overarching goal every year, and this year is learning. And I think every year is kind of learning. We all focus on improving ourselves and being the best that we can to serve our clients, obviously, and just become better at our jobs. And all of us will never shy away from a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, especially if you want to challenge us to a gang fight, we're down.
Anchorman, the news team.
The other real estate teams, I'll bring my chain, yeah. And I'll just whip it around. So, Bridge, when's your next appointment?
11.
Okay, so you got it. So Bridge is gonna sign off. Bridge, you want to sign off? You want to add anything, or is a contribute? Let's say, what's your life motto?
Well, my life motto, I think it changes. I think right now for me is learning. I think learning about myself, I think, is really important for me right now. I thank you for having me on your pod, or forcing me to be on your pod. It's been great. And now I'll leave it to Jill.
You're supposed to say, listen to Michael.
Listen to yourself, guys. Listen to yourself.
All right, so Bridget's going to go. She has to do it. What, you did an appraisal?
Appraisal, yeah.
Jill's doing an appraisal. So what an appraisal is basically when someone's buying a property and they need a mortgage, the bank would hire a third-party appraiser to view the property to make sure that all the details that you have advertised are correct. They take photos, and they would do a third-party appraisal to make sure that all the items were in the right order and basically make sure the value was correct for what someone's going to be buying the property for. So that's where Bridge is going to show an appraiser one of our listings, which we're really happy about. So now it's just Jill and I, so we can talk shit about Bridget.
Like we weren't already before.
Yeah, we were. I think so now, like when I came in, Bridget and Jill were talking about me, and now that Bridget's gone, we can talk about her. Just kidding. So Jill, what do you think was the most valuable thing you learned so far this year?
I think this year I've really learned to I guess just like trust myself, trust my own judgment. In previous years or in previous situations, I assumed that I was going to make the wrong decision. This year, it's like I feel that confidence in myself that I'm able to trust my own judgment and my own decisions and listen to myself before others. So I think that's the biggest lesson this year.
How did you learn that?
It all stems from like self-confidence and. Yeah.
So if we were to a day in the life, so like doing a day in the life of Jill being on a busy resale real estate team, what would that look like?
Yeah, I mean, a day in my life, I guess, you know, I like to wake up early-ish, enough time to like do my hair, choose a cute outfit, wake up. So I have a dog that I love and, you know, like take my dog out. So drive to the office, get to the office. The first thing I always do is like write down a to-do list for the day. Like I think it's super important. It's the only way that I stay on track. And throughout the day, as I finish those tasks, like I'll literally like write check marks in that book. So that's like kind of the first thing I do. The second thing I do is look at the calendar. We have that shared calendar. I want to know obviously what I'm doing that day. It's different every day. But it's normally, you know, like the morning in the office, like I'll come in, I'll have coffee, I'll chat with my friends in the office, and then I'll check emails and I'll respond to emails. And then I'll normally have like a couple appointments throughout the day. So I'll go to those appointments. My day at the office on, I guess, a regular day is finished around 5, but, you know, sometimes I'll have evening appointments or evening showings, get home, try and go to the gym or like at least out somewhere. I hate sitting around the house, so I try to always be doing something. Maybe one night a week I'll like chill. Mm-hmm. Other than that, I'm out doing stuff with friends or just busy. I like to be busy. Yeah, I guess that sums it up. Like every day is different, but there's those like couple things that I definitely have to do every day.
If you could change something about your job or change something about your personal life, what would it be?
That's a tough question to answer.
Brainbusters.
I guess, I kind of want to relocate. Like, I want to move. So right now I live in East Van, but it's a little bit more east than I would like. I would like to be a little bit closer to this area because my life is all out here, and it's like I'm driving 25 minutes all the time, like going back home, like getting changed, going back out. I'd like to move. In my professional life, I want to acquire more skills. So
yeah, we were talking about we talked about it just briefly, but Jill has a really good eye for design, and her mom is actually an interior designer as mm-hmm. well. So like we thought that would be like a really cool. I thought it would be really cool, and I, you know, we're still talking about it, so I guess we can talk about it now. Like of something to kind of, because I'm a huge believer in you got to continue to learn and grow, and a part of our core values that we have in the. Well, Jill pulled them off the wall.
Off the wall now.
Yeah, is to, you know, pursue growth, right? So where did that interest in interior design come from? Is it from your mom, or what do you think?
I remember growing up, my mom was always like, one of you needs to continue my interior design business. And it was never on the radar for me because growing up as a kid, I was always more social than I was artistic, creative. I wasn't interested, like I just wanted to be out doing my own thing. So I don't think that I realized that I was interested in it until later in life. But I do remember, it's kind of funny, as a kid, I would always want to rearrange my room. I would draw in this notebook, and I remember I would draw out like my bed, my dresser, like in different ways that I could organize my room. So I remember doing that kind of stuff as a kid, and but I didn't realize that I was good at it until obviously I had my own place. And I'm just like obsessed with going to HomeSense and Winners, and when it comes to staging or decorating, I know that I'm good at that, and I really enjoy it. I love it, and I love just putting things together, like even like outfits for the day. You know, I love putting things together. I think a lot about it. So
yeah, Jill is actually, she has a very, very good eye for space and design. And if you come to our website, michaelyu.com, it was designed by Jill. So, and so, you know, she has a lot of really great ideas about aesthetics perspective, which is really cool, which is a huge, and I'm a huge believer, when you build a team, you got to fill your gaps. I don't have an aesthetic eye. If you see me walking down the street, you can probably tell that I'm built for, like, I only care about comfort.
Yeah.
Comfort and, like, ease of use. Like, everything's about easiness or comfort, like, from an aesthetic standpoint for me. Like, in, for example, we, our office that we're in is, like, I designed this office for us so that we could, we have the smallest office.
And the messiest.
And the messiest office. And it's all, like, for comfort and like, and it's
practical,
very practical. There's no like flair.
No, everything's like written in Michael's handwriting that I'm looking at right now.
Yeah, I just put everything up on the wall, you know, the whiteboards and all the rest of it. So, yeah, so I think it's good to have people around you that, especially when you're building a team, have people around you that like aren't exactly the same as you. You need to have those differences. For example, like ideas of space. I'm horrible with ideas of space. And, you know, Jill might have some things that, oh, you know, maybe I would be more willing to talk to a stranger or something like
that. Definitely.
So having those types of balances within a team, I think, is really, really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And a really great you know, like compliment to a team. So
yeah, I think all four of us, or all five of us, sorry, we all have different strengths. Like we're very different people. Our
absolutely
team.
Yeah, and it's we gel real well though.
Yeah, we get along.
Yeah, which is really surprising because like I actually secretly hate them all.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah, but we do things like, for example, last year we went up to the cabin together to like hang out, and we're like playing games. It was weird, and I was like poking at a fire with
yeah
Vegas.
Michael was like fire master.
Oh, I was the fire master last year. Yeah. So yeah, it's really great to kind of have that personal connection, but have a different set of skills. I always think of it, because I'm a nerd, but Jill, do you know what the X-Men are?
Yes.
Yeah, so the X-Men, so I actually hate Superman. Superman is like my most hated of all.
Clark Kent.
He's my most hated of all superheroes because, like, he can do everything. I don't believe that exists. Like, that's like,
he is perfect.
Yeah, he's just perfect. Yeah. He's handsome. He's got, like, jet black hair. He's got a perfect jawline. And he flies. He's strongest. He's fastest. He's smartest. Blah, blah, blah.
Hmm.
And that doesn't exist. So I think we're all kind of like the X-Men.
Yeah.
So the X-Men all have, like, an individual skill. So there's this X-Men. His name's Wolverine. He has claws. And the person that he needs the most on the team is this guy called Cyclops, who can actually like shoot a laser beam from far distance. So like they're a great team because one of them can fight close and one of them can fight far. So that's who Wolverine needs the most on his team. And it's weird because personally they don't get along, they're actually kind of enemies. But it's very, very interesting, the dynamics of a team. And so if you're Wolverine, you gotta find your Cyclops. And if you're whatever it is, you gotta find what's complementary to you, which is uncomfortable in a lot of cases. And I found that I, at the beginning of my building teams and doing things like that, I was trying to find people exactly like me, which was wrong. And I was falling on my face, like, because it wasn't complementary, and we were doubling up on the same things all the time. And so having some very, very common like core value strains, like, all of us are very hardworking, for example. Those are things that are just ingrained, and so you can't train someone to be hardworking. You can't. It doesn't exist. You can't train someone to be high integrity, like, just doesn't exist. Like, you just have to have it. So there's some things, like, that are kind of golden rule type of things that you can, and others that you, you know, but all the skill sets, I think, is important to think about.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you worked on teams in the past, what did you see? Like, obviously, you were, like, kind of younger and stuff like that.
It's funny, like, our team, Mike doesn't feel like, you know, this big, scary boss. We're friends. And in previous teams, the boss was always so scary and, you know, I was so intimidated by them. And I guess, yeah, it was just different in that way.
Because, obviously, one day, Jill's going to be the boss. And so, you know, I always thought about how I would want to be treated myself, you know, if I was in someone else's shoes. And so, for example, like in our office, I don't have a special desk or anything like that. We all kind of work in like a community-based place where, you know, I don't have like the big corner office or anything like mm-hmm. that, because I just don't think that's fair. You know, I think if you're not willing to kind of have the same thing, then I just don't agree with it. I have my dad's chair that I brought here, which is kind of cool. But I think Bridget's chair is more expensive than my dad's chair.
I don't even know where this chair I'm sitting in came from. Yeah, like, I think it was, like, abandoned in the hall and we just, like, picked it up.
Yeah, that's right. I think Jill's is from IKEA. It's a visual podding.
So. Yeah, it is. Yeah.
So, Jill, you've been editing the podcast so yes. far. So, like, tell me, like, how much have you, like, is that a great, do you enjoy doing that? Do you enjoy the experience, like, your first two?
You know what? So, obviously, if you've been listening to the podcast, you know, the first podcast that Michael did was with Amanda, our office manager, and it took me forever to edit because I was being such a perfectionist, so I'm, like, going through every single second, like, making sure, like, and I think in my personal life, I have a lot of situations where I'm sitting with friends for hours, and we're real, and we, like, get into stuff. And conversation goes all sorts of ways, but you don't really get that situation much with people that you work with or people that you have professional relationships with. But I think that's what kind of comes out when you do a podcast with someone. Like, the conversation gets real and you talk about stuff and you learn about people. And I think that is really cool. And I think that's why Mike is so into this pod thing.
Yeah, I totally agree, because this whole idea of, like, these surface relationships, mm-hmm. you know, that you have with people that you spend so much time with, like yeah, and you just have these kind of on-surface relationships. How's your weekend? Like, I'm kind of just sick of it. You know? Like, I'm like, so even now I'm trying to get to really learn about, I think everyone has an opportunity to teach you something. Or that or you to teach them something in some cases. So, like, I just, this whole, like, notion of, like, surface, like, how are you? Good, how are you? Like, I'm just, like, done.
Yeah.
And so having the ability to do these podcasts, I'm really getting to learn about people. And it's changing some of my opinions on and worldviews as well, which is really, really cool. Like, podcasts we did with Thomas Beeson, and when he was talking about his, like, his upbringing, growing up and, like, sleeping on the floor when he's 10 years old. I was like,
you know, I think I admire a lot when people he's honest about his life, and I don't think that that's easy. Once you share a honest piece of yourself, it brings you so much closer with someone. Not only that, but everyone has a story, and a story can inspire. Hearing a story like Thomas's, people can hear their own story, and you can relate to that. And anytime you can relate to someone, it inspires you to do maybe the same and maybe help someone else. And I think when people are, like, completely honest about something that's hard, it's, you're vulnerable and you become closer with someone. And I love that.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity, because we're all human. And mm-hmm. nobody's perfect. We're all flawed. There's no Superman.
Everyone does have a story. It's cool when you feel that confidence to, like, be real about who you are too. When you can use that experience and grow from it, I think it's great. And, you know, when I was younger, like, got caught up in this life and friends with, like, these bad people. And it wasn't until something happened in my life where I realized where my life was heading if I kept going in that direction. In that lifestyle, no one cares about your interests. They all care about their own interests. And I think once I realized that, I turned it around and I completely changed the direction of my life. And and I think that going through that situation it made me stronger. And it goes back to like what we were saying before about like making mistakes. It's like making mistakes, making wrong decisions, like it only makes you stronger and better. And I think all of the like stupid, immature decisions that I've made have only made me better. So, yeah.
So did that epiphany, did that change happen in a moment or did it happen gradually?
Yeah, it happened in a moment. I just realized in that moment, these people aren't really my friends. And and I had abandoned all of my values that I was grown up with. And then I had to go make those changes to like get back on the right track.
Mm-hmm. You know, life will teach us lessons and they'll give us opportunities to repeat those mistakes until we learn the lesson. And so sometimes it's a culmination of a lot of different things, or sometimes it happens in a moment with something that's like striking. Yeah, it's just, you know, it's an amazing kind of journey that people get that they get to lead. And we are all human and we're affected very deeply by, one, our environment, and two, the people that create our environment, the people that surround us every single day. And it is absolutely critical and essential to really analyze the people that you're spending your life with, that they are contributing and good people. Mm-hmm. And it is such a huge part of life and kind of admiring things from the outside. I remember, like, I always wanted to be a cool kid.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because I was a huge nerd, but I was like, oh, man, those guys are dyeing their hair. They're, like, parting it in the middle. Yeah. They're wearing, like, Adidas track pants and like, wow, they have a cool like Planet Superstar bag. I'm like, oh my gosh, like they're so cool.
Yeah.
And I always wanted to be part of that life, but I really, you know, I couldn't afford it. And it's just, you know, and I have like I'm a nerd, so I couldn't have it. And but I always admired it, and I always wondered what life was. I wonder how awesome life would have been for those people. But I think, you know, getting to know Jill and hearing her stories and stuff, that maybe it wasn't as good as I thought.
Yeah, it's consuming too. It was a feeling of always wanting more.
This is kind of a saying, you know, if you got a hole in your heart, you can't fill it with like LV and it's gonna get patched. A few people have said this to me before, but like I tell them, like, money doesn't make me happy.
Yeah.
It will always disappoint. And so like, even though you do super well or you're very famous, that's not what's going to make you happy. It just depends for every individual. I think for my own experience, I can speak about it, is like being able to contribute to others is what genuinely gives me satisfaction and happiness. And being able to share my life with people that I care about deeply and helping to contribute. It's always about contributing. Like, how can I help? I always like to be a helper. I always think of myself as like Jiminy Cricket. Like, I'm like, oh, let me help. Like, if Jill's Pinocchio, I'm like her Jiminy Cricket. I'm like, hey, like, let me help you. Like, oh, are you sure you should do that? And I always think about those types of things, you know, when I'm kind of conducting my way through life. And it genuinely gives me a lot of happiness. And because, and it's weird, but money comes from doing those things. So it's like, it's this like perpetual, like it's kind of, it's this like ecosystem that is created by being able to contribute and help others. For some strange reason, like things kind of come back, you know, in a mysterious way in many cases. So what do you think about that?
I am so happy that I learned that lesson early, because I think I would have been searching for it forever. I don't know. It's not karma. It's like the universe. What you put in is what you get out. And I used to always say, like, I had the worst luck. And then as soon as I made this change in my life, things just come to me. It's because I'm putting good things into the world, and so the world is giving me good things back.
I think that is an amazing way to finish this podcast. I want to thank Bridget so much, who's doing an appraisal right now. And I'd like to thank my special guest, Jillian Van Dam, who is also... I think I see Jill more than any human being in this planet.
Yeah.
You see me, and I probably see you more than any, like more than my girlfriend. And I think I sleep next to my girlfriend. So, like, Jill and I are close. But I want to say thank you so much for being a part of the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you guys.